Hi, I'm Kevin Craig, the founder of George Washington Coaching. This week in America, many Americans are remembering the birthday of George Washington on February 22nd. I'd like to ask, what is the best way to honor George Washington? And I think the answer is simple. Do what he said, or follow his lead, follow his example, follow his advice. And what I've created in George Washington Coaching is basically what I think George Washington would advise you to do if he were here this year, if you travel through time perhaps, what he would say you should do. If he were to show up and talk with you for a while, I think he would conclude that you're a victim of educational malpractice, that you don't know what he learned in school, you don't know what the average teenager in a colonial America knew when they graduated from high school, and he would say you need to embark on a program of education. I'd like to describe for you what I think he would say to you, what I think his program of education would be for you, and how it can transform you. And I'd like to make this promise to you. If you enroll in this coaching program, you will experience the most profound, the most beneficial, and the most lasting personal transformation you have ever experienced in your life, or I'll refund your enrollment fee. In fact, I'll double it. If that's the only way I can get you on board to sign up for this program, I'll double your enrollment fee. So let's review why it is I think you're a victim of educational malpractice, why George Washington would think that if he were to talk to you for an hour or two, an evening, and get your opinion. Most important, what would George Washington think about our country if he were to travel through time to the future, to his future? I think he would be very disappointed. I think he would be outraged and angered, in fact. And then he would ask, what are you doing about it? And that's when he would become, I think, even more discouraged. So let's ask this simple question, or let's just realize this simple fact. It is illegal, according to the federal government in Washington, D.C., it is illegal for your local public school teacher to teach students that the Declaration of Independence is really true. Now, your local school teacher can teach that a bunch of dead white males like George Washington used to believe the Declaration of Independence, or they can teach they really didn't believe it after all. It was just a ruse to protect their businesses, but they can't teach that what it says is really true. I'm talking about propositions like that the existence of God is a self-evident truth, that God has revealed his commandments to us, the laws of nature, of nature's God, that we're all going to face God as our judge to determine whether we did, in fact, conform our lives to the revealed morality, the laws of nature and of nature's God, that our rights are the product of intelligent design, that they're not just arbitrary social conventions, but they come by virtue of the fact that we have a creator. You can't teach these things in public school. And of course, you can't teach that if we conform our lives, not just personally and privately, but our nation conforms its lives, as Washington said, to the rules of heaven, that we can have a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. You can't teach that in a public school. That's the opposite of deism. Well, I think you're beginning to see that there is a great gap between what Americans were taught in public schools 230 years ago versus what they're taught today. And you are a product of your times, just like Washington was a product of his time. Now, we're not saying Washington was perfect. When we say he was a product of his time, we're admitting that, in fact, he made some big mistakes. I'd like to tell you about the mistakes he made, and I think he would see them really almost instantaneously if he were to travel through time and look at our culture today, take a minute, take an hour or so to look at the average public school classroom to see the lack of discipline, the lack of respect for teachers and so forth, to see the decline in test scores. There are many ways to look at America, and I think someone of Washington's intelligence would see quite quickly that there are some significant problems. He would see that he made some mistakes. He would see, for example, that the Constitution did not protect us from a government that was as tyrannical as the government that America's founders abolished. In fact, the government they abolished was a far more Christian and far more libertarian government than the government we have today. So scroll down on the page to the caption that says, Five Things to Know, Five Books to Read. And I'd like to tell you what I think Washington would say you need to know, five things you need to know, and five books you need to read in order to become a great American, a great Christian, and a great human being. When I speak of those three things, being a great American, a great Christian, a great human being, I'm thinking of another founding father, Samuel Adams. He wrote he corresponded with the American colonists from town hall to town hall through a network of communication known as the Committees of Correspondence. And the first letter he wrote to the Americans through that network of communication, the Committees of Correspondence, said, "We need to remember our rights as Englishmen, our rights as Christians, and our rights as human beings." And of course, that would make us better Americans, better Englishmen. Back then, they hadn't declared independence, but we would say today, we want to become better Americans, and better Christians, and better human beings. That's the goal of our coaching program. And that's our guarantee that you will admit that you have become a better American, a better Christian, and a better human being by learning the five things that Washington would want you to know, or Sam Adams, or any of the founders, and reading the five books that you should have read in your public school education or your government-approved private school education but didn't get a chance to. So if you found that caption, five things to know, five books to read, let's scroll down. I'm going to tell you some things that may be a little bit controversial. As I said, I think Washington would admit that he'd made some mistakes, and maybe you're not willing to admit he did. Maybe you think that things are okay the way they are, but Washington, I think, would see that there's a tremendous gap between the ideals of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and what we see in practice today. The Bible says, "Iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens the wits of another." That's one translation, but you get the idea that when two ideas come into conflict, there might be some sparks flying, but if you treat those ideas and the person bringing those ideas with some respect and listen respectfully, listen courteously, that you'll become a better person. You'll become better informed not only about what the other person says, but even about your own ability to analyze what that other person says. You're not going to agree with some things that I'm about to tell you, but I think you'll find you'll be sharper for listening. The first thing I would like to bring to your attention is, as I said, the first letter that Samuel Adams wrote, and Samuel Adams became known as the father of the American Revolution. And he, as I said, we need to become better Americans, better Christians, and better human beings. What does it mean to be a real American? I would say that if George Washington were to travel through time, he would say that there aren't a lot of real Americans. A real American, for example, is willing to risk his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor in defense of liberty. And he would say, we don't have liberty today. Remember the Boston Tea Party. The tax on the tea, which fomented that act, was that Boston Tea Party, was 3 pence per pound of tea. And the colonists only drank about 10 pounds of tea a year. So that was a fairly not very big tax. And yet they took action. That's because James Madison says we are to take alarm at the first infringement of our liberties. Well, we haven't been taking alarm. And in fact, now if you're one of those who pay income tax, then you're paying 20 times more than the colonists paid to Britain. 20 times more. It's amazing when you think about it how big the government has become and how much of our income it takes and really how much of that it wastes. And that's the best thing you can say about a lot of government spending is that it's wasteful. A lot of government spending is just plain wicked and evil. And George Washington would be the first to be alarmed and astounded at things that the government promotes. Perverted sex, abortion, all kinds of things. The wars around the world, which are completely unnecessary and completely counterproductive. For example, we recently finished a war in Iraq. That war decimated the largest population of Christians in the Arab world, and now we have an Islamic theocracy under Sharia law. 4,000 Americans died, 40,000 were injured, 1 million Iraqis have died in the last 20 years at the hands of American, or I should say United States foreign policy, and the result is an Islamic theocracy under Sharia law? George Washington would say, "What are you people doing?" So are we real Americans? Do we have that original American dream? Today the American dream for many people is to own your own house. And by own, they mean have a mortgage. And that's a nightmare. When you think about it historically, that's not what Washington intended. For every American to have a mortgaged home, that's not a dream. And even if you have a mortgaged home, the government today claims the right to be able to take your home from you and give it to a developer of a mall simply because the mall developer promises to pay more taxes on the property than you're paying. That's a tyranny. that when the government claims the power to take your home, that's a tyranny. Even if the government doesn't take everybody's home, it claims the power to do so, and that's wrong. Washington would say, where are the real Americans today? And if you're not an alarmist, if you don't oppose tyranny, if you don't take risks, if you don't understand the original American dream as Washington understood it. Washington's description of the American dream was everyone dwelling safely under his own vine and fig tree, an allusion to a number of passages in the Bible, which, according to the Library of Congress, were Washington's favorite Bible verses. Well, George Washington Coaching is sponsored by a nonprofit tax-exempt organization called Vine and Fig Tree, and it's our goal to promote that original American dream of everyone dwelling safely under his own vine and fig tree. Washington also said, and many of the other founding fathers said, that a true American is also a Christian, and I'll talk more about that. Right now, I just want to give you the big picture of the five things you need to know. But Washington would also ask, where are the real Christians in America? What does it mean to be a Christian? Where are the people who are really putting their Christianity into practice today? And, I think he'd have some real questions. In colonial America, every student, just about, I mean, if you can find one or two students in all of America who were not taught the shorter catechism, then you've proven the rule that all the others were. In a nation where their population was about 3 million, there were more than 4 million copies of the shorter catechism in print. And that's because it was in every schoolroom in America, just about. And that catechism is a short summary of the Christian religion. When the Delaware Indians came to George Washington, George Washington said, "You've done the right thing by coming here and wanting to learn our arts and our ways of life, but especially, it's a good thing for you to learn the religion of Jesus Christ." That's what Washington, George Washington, told the Delaware Indians. But what is the religion of Jesus Christ? Most people today don't know it. Most church-going Christians couldn't pass the colonial shorter catechism that most children knew. And even a lot of seminary graduates who are pastoring churches don't know the fundamentals of the religion of Jesus Christ. Finally, Sam Adams said that we need to guard our rights as men. We would say our goal is to be extraordinary human beings. What does it mean to be a real human being? When the Declaration of Independence says that our rights are the product of intelligent design, that we were personally endowed by our Creator with rights, what does that mean? Well, it means a number of things. I've got some links there just for you to take a look at. But we'll be talking about what the Bible says, what the Creator says. The same Creator who gave us the laws of nature and of nature's man also revealed what it means to be truly human. It means to exercise dominion over the earth. It means to be a good servant of our Creator. And there are many other things that make us a truly human. Because we're created in the image of God, it means to understand God, to glorify God, and enjoy Him forever. In fact, that was the very first question in the Catechism. What is the chief end of man? What makes us truly human? And the answer is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. And every American who was 5 years old or older knew the answer to that question. What is the chief end of man? And the vast majority of Americans couldn't even answer that question. We live in a different world. Washington would see that instantly. He would say the first thing we need to know is to pay attention to that nice summary of the American vision that Samuel Adams gave us in that first letter through the Committees of Correspondence. Now, there's a second thing that Washington would notice, and that is that the three most important subjects that were to be taught in public schools have been banned by Washington, D.C. today. We have the most important, the most basic, the most foundational documents and charters in our nation's history say that the purpose of public schools was to teach religion, and they mean by that Christianity, not the religion of Osama bin Laden, Christian religion, Christian morality, and knowledge of how the world really works. And these three things have all been banned. The first two explicitly banned by the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, that says you can't teach religion, you can't teach the Ten Commandments, you can't teach students in public school that God says, the Creator says, thou shalt not kill. You can't even say that. And that, Washington would say, that is absolutely insane. It's not just un-American, and it's not just pragmatically not very shrewd, but it's just insane. And Washington would be outraged that public schools today ban religion and morality. And it's not surprising that schools that ban religion and morality produce students which don't respect teachers, which don't respect God, which don't respect morality and the rights of others, and therefore aren't able to study, aren't able to learn, aren't able to complete their assignments, and therefore lack knowledge, and therefore find their test scores declining compared with other countries. Washington would say our public schools are a travesty and a disaster. But you're a product of public schools. You're a product of schools which the government approves of. And even private schools which profess to teach Christian religion or others have been forced to conform more and more to the religion of secular humanism, which is now the state religion, the religion of the public schools. And even if you went to a private Christian school or Catholic school or Lutheran school, you were cheated. And you're the victim of educational malpractice. And Washington would see that if he could travel through time. The third thing that Washington would want you to realize is that he made some mistakes, that America's founding fathers made some mistakes. For example, if Washington were to look at our national budget, our government's federal budget, and see that we're in debt trillions of dollars, and if he were to see that the federal government, the politicians, in order to get elected, have promised voters benefits. Today we call them entitlements, which is not far removed from rights. We're saying to American politicians today are saying to Americans, you have the right to have your student loans paid off. You have the right to medical care. You have the right to a job that doesn't require you to work very hard, but does give you lots of benefits and lots of salary. You have rights. You're entitled to these things. Washington would see that this whole concept of rights was a bad idea. It mutated into the entitlement culture, which is destroying our country. And I can't put any emphasis on that and overemphasize that. The entitlement culture is destroying our country. We now have over $200 trillion of unfunded entitlement liabilities, and the economic danger of those is extraordinary. Instead, what Washington would say is, you know what? It's not the right emphasis. It's not the right direction. It's not the right approach to say you have the right to life. What needs to be said is not that we have the right to life. Nobody ever walked up to the Creator and said, "I have a right to life, and I demand that you create me." Life is a gift. But what we have is the laws of nature and of nature's God, which says it's a crime, it's a sin to kill someone. I don't have a right to life, but you have a duty not to kill me. You don't have a right to life. I have a duty before God not to kill you. You can say you have a right to life, but if everybody in your culture believes that he is his own God and he has the right to kill you, your right to life means nothing. Same with the right to property. You can say you have a right to property. The government can say you have a right to property or liberty. But if everybody in your culture believes that they are their own God, they can make up their own morality as they go along, and they can kill you or steal you if it fits their purposes or is convenient for them, then your rights mean nothing. Duties. America's founding fathers actually said this repeatedly, that it's our moral duties that create the foundations and preconditions of liberty and an ordered society. That's what we want, is liberty, freedom from coercion, freedom from the initiation of force by others, and we want an ordered society. And it's moral duties, it's religion, morality, and knowledge that provide those things, not this concept of rights or entitlements. The second thing I think was a big mistake that America's founding fathers made, and I'd like to think that Washington would see this too, is violent revolution against the state. I think the Bible is real clear on this, that we're supposed to pay our taxes, we're not supposed to take up the sword against the government, that violent revolution is wrong. I think Washington would see that because we're a very violent culture. Washington would also see the futility of going about all around the world trying to overthrow governments that we don't like. This idea of violent revolution against the state is not the strategy we need. Rather, we need to get politicians to repent, to obey the laws of nature and of nature's God, to stop stealing, to stop killing, to stop conscripting, to stop imprisoning, to stop doing things that God prohibits. And we do this through moral suasion and persuasion, not by armed revolution. That armed revolution breaks down social order. What did we gain by tens of thousands of Christians killed over a tax rate of really only 1 or 2%? was America, did America ultimately, in the long run, become a better country by engaging in a violent revolution against Britain? I don't think so. I think Washington would be clear. We're technologically more advanced in many ways, but morally and culturally and legally, economically, when you realize that we're paying over 2/3 of everything we earn to the government, and the government of Britain didn't demand anywhere near that amount, and the government of Britain would never think of giving your colonial tax revenue to kill babies through abortion or to promote unbiblical sexuality, Washington would say, what did you gain? What did we gain by this violent revolution and killing tens of thousands of Christians? The second huge mistake that America made, that America's founders made, was after they abolished the government. And I remind you that the Declaration of Independence says we not only have a right to abolish any government that becomes a tyranny, but it's our duty to do so. Well, after we fulfilled that duty, then we went about and created another government. And it turned out that government was even worse. And when you think about it, when you think about how big the government has become, and you know that Washington would say we need to, for example, abolish the Federal Department of Education because the Constitution didn't give the federal government any power over education, and that department is purely wasteful. Education has not gotten any better since we had a Federal Department of Education created just a few decades ago. And you keep slicing away at the federal government, all those departments which are unconstitutional, which have no authority among the enumerated powers of the Constitution, and you get down to the basics. What is it that we need a government for? What is it that the free market can't provide? Well, I'd like to suggest there's nothing. And that leads us to the three most hated words in politics today and three really controversial concepts, which I believe Washington would say, yep, I think so. And you need to embrace these three most hated words in politics today if you want to become an extraordinary American. That is really understanding that original vision of American, every American dwelling safely under his own vine and fig tree, that original American vision, one who's willing to stand up and take risks, risk your honor, your life, your fortune, your sacred honor, to protect liberty and to prevent tyranny. To become an extraordinary Christian, as Washington said, as Samuel Adams said, we need to become better Christians and to become better human beings. In our day today, in the 21st century, there are three concepts that you need to embrace. They're very controversial, so I'm going to remind you, iron sharpens iron. Think about these very carefully, and I think you'll agree. First, when I said rights were a bad idea, that entitlements are destroying us, and I said duties are more important, well, the question is, who says? Who says it's my duty not to kill? What if I don't want to? What if I want to kill you? What if you're inconveniencing me? What if I want to kill you? What if I want what you've got? What if I want your property? Who says I have a duty not to steal? When you talk about duties, you eventually talk about God. You talk about religion. Morality is simply religion put into practice. And every morality is reflective of some religion. Now today, most people, their morality reflects the religion of secular humanism, that every man is his own God. There is no God out there, but every individual is his or her own God. That's the religion of secular humanism. And we get to decide for ourselves what constitutes good and evil. Well, that religion and that morality are destroying us. And what Washington knew and said over and over again was that we need to concern ourselves with the laws of nature and of nature's God. And we need to recall, for example, the rules of heaven. And as he told the Delaware Indians, the religion of Jesus Christ. If you want to recreate the kind of public schools that existed in Washington's day, back in George Washington's day, and you wanted to bring those schools to 2012, our public schools today, the ACLU and secular humanists would all say you're trying to impose a theocracy. And I guess you could say it is a theocracy. Theocracy means God rules. If we're a nation under God, then God is over us, God rules, that's a theocracy. And America has always been a nation under God. And our schools have always taught children that God says, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, don't lie, wait until you get married, because God says so. And that's, if you want to say that's a theocracy, fine. But that's the way it was, and that's the way it should be. And so Washington would say, okay, fine, I'm a theocrat. Call me a theocrat. Say I want to bring about a theocracy. I do want a nation under God. Washington could not have been clearer that he wanted a government under God. And so, fine, theocracy. Is that really that controversial? Well, yeah, it is at first, but I think when people think about it, they realize, that's the way it should be. When I say that violent revolution against the state is wrong, that Jesus and the New Testament plainly say, pay your taxes and don't engage in violent revolution. Don't return evil for evil. When someone does something bad to you, don't do it back to him. Don't take vengeance. Try to get the person to see that they've done wrong. Try to get that person to restore it, to make restitution, to repent of what they did. But don't just take vengeance, and don't engage in violent revolution against the state. People are going to accuse you of being a pacifist. Well, fine. What is the alternative? Right now, our love of violence has created a century, really. This deviation from the teachings of Jesus have made us one of the most violent centuries in recorded history. Hundreds of millions of people killed because people are willing to take up, to put on a uniform and get a gun out and just follow orders and kill the Jews, kill the Ukrainians, kill the Cambodians, slaughter millions, tens of millions of Chinese just because the government says so. And if I disagree with that and I say we should not engage in violent revolution and I say we should not respond to evil with more evil, we should not escalate the violence, and people call me a pacifist, well, fine. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but the word pacifism will not hurt me. But I think we need to take seriously the fact that the Bible, and especially Christian ethics, say that we should not jump at the chance of executing violence against people we don't like, using coercion and compulsion to get our way, and especially to export arms around the world and create violence wherever we go, at least in terms of the United States, and not be willing to put on a uniform and start killing other Americans simply because we're told to. And there really is a huge big difference between the religion of Jesus Christ and the way we're supposed to treat others with forgiveness and patience and not respond with vengeance, and the current practice today. Around the world, violence, vengeance, armies, militarism, invasion, and it's a wild gap that we seldom think about, but I think Washington would see the violence as crazy in our world today. Now, if you really don't believe in violence, if you really don't believe you have the right to steal, that you don't have the right to kill, then you would, I think, agree that you don't have the right to hire someone else to kill for you so that your hands are clean. You say, I'll pay you $10,000 if you kill my wife. Well, your hands are not clean. Well, what if you get all your friends together and you say, let's vote on whether to kill my wife? And let's make Smith over there. Let's tell Smith. Let's all vote on Smith killing my wife because she bothers me. Well, that's what the government is. The government is sanctioning violence, sanctioning murder, sanctioning theft, sanctioning the deprivation of liberty by a vote. But a majority vote doesn't make murder right. It doesn't make theft right. Just because the majority vote to tax the rich doesn't mean that's not theft. It is theft. So if you don't believe in violence, in the long run, you're going to head pretty quickly to that most hated word in politics today, and that's anarchism. Now, you know what Jesus said to his disciples? That the kings of the Gentiles love to rule over other people. They like to impose their will on other people by force. They like to be on top. They like others to be under them. And Jesus said, the word he used in Mark's Gospel, chapter 10, he said the kings of the Gentiles love to be archists. He used the Greek word from which we get our English word anarchism. He said, the kings of the Gentiles like to be archists, but you, my followers, are not to be archists. Well, logically, that means we're supposed to be anarchists. But obviously what Jesus said when he went on to say, I want you to be servants, just like I didn't come to be an archist over you, I came to be a servant. That's what I want you to do. Just like I didn't defend myself when they attacked me, I want you to follow in my steps. See 1 Peter 2 on that one. And that leads you inevitably to anarchism, because it's wrong to vote to steal. It's wrong to vote to kill. Just because the government says put on a uniform and kill all the Jews doesn't mean you should do that. And our human society does not need archists. We don't need the kings of the Gentiles. In an ironic way, the Bible says that Christians are all priests and kings, but we really don't need priests and we really don't need kings. Society will function if we follow the laws of nature and of nature's God. I'd like to suggest that if you read the five most important works in the history of Western civilization, the works that Washington, George Washington, would say you should read if he were to travel through time and be your coach, just like an athlete wants to win the gold medal in the Olympics, the first thing that athlete does is hire a coach. If you want to become a great American, an extraordinary Christian, and an extraordinary human being, you need to coach. And you need the curriculum that America's public schools had. You need to put into practice in a disciplined way that a coach can tell you what to do. And you also need to join with others who are pursuing that same gold medal, who also have a coach. And that brings us to the five things that, the five works, the five most important works that you need to read. Now, if you'll click the link to the five works, you'll be taken down to lower down on the page after we tell you the five most important things that I've already been telling you about. Just summarizing, you can see obviously there's a lot to do here, and I really try my best to set out the evidence and the arguments for why it is these are the things that George Washington would say you need to read, you need to think about, you need to study. And I propose that you join the George Washington Coaching Program and over the next 305 days, study these things, cure the fact that you're a victim of educational malpractice. And the way to do that is to read the five most important works in the history of Western civilization. And those works are, first, the Bible. That's clearly the most important book in the history of the human race. That book has had more influence, more books have been written about the Bible, and I'm sure that George Washington, as well as other founding fathers, would say you need to become familiar with the Bible. George Washington's daughter said that Washington spent an hour each day in prayerful, devotional study of the Bible and other important works of a moral character that help develop good character and make people better Americans. And he would say that your ignorance of the Bible is inexcusable. And so we need to read the Bible, and we can do so in basically about 10 minutes a day over the next 365 days. Now, as I've already mentioned, the second most popular work in colonial America was the Shorter Catechism, but we should read all of the Catechism and the Confession of Faith that came from the Westminster Assembly in the 1640s. These were taught in America's public schools, they were taught in the churches, they dominated thinking and the intellectual climate of America in its first 200 years after America was settled. And I think that our unfamiliarity with the basics of Christianity has really hurt Americans. The third work I think we should look at is this whole concept of theocracy. Now, the United States Supreme Court back in 1892 said that America was a Christian nation. The Supreme Court said that over and over again in the 1800s, in the first 100 years after the Constitution was ratified, repeatedly said America is a Christian nation. Everybody knew this. This wasn't controversial at all. It's only in the 20th century that that became something of a controversy, and that's because the religion of secular humanism was imposed on America by the government. And of course, you can say that Christianity was imposed by the government, and that's an inescapable fact. Government always imposes religion. Every law is the legislation of morality. People say you can't legislate morality. Well, a red light is a legislation of morality. It says don't kill by running into someone else's car. Don't destroy their property. Don't steal. All laws are the reflection of morality. The question is, whose morality? The laws of nature and of nature's God, or the laws of Osama bin Laden, or the laws of some atheist? Well, we need to understand this concept of theocracy, because every government is a theocracy. There are Muslim theocracies. There are Christian theocracies. Some of them are good. Some of them are consistent with their founders' principles. I would say that America has been somewhat consistent, but on other points, inconsistent. We need to become a more consistent Christian theocracy. And I think that's what the founding fathers of America would say. We haven't been consistent, but we have become more and more consistently an atheistic theocracy with every man his own God, and that's getting us nowhere. That's driving us off the cliff. So we need to go back to becoming self-consciously a Christian theocracy and understand what that really means. It doesn't mean a police state. It doesn't mean there's a priest or a religious policeman quartered in every home. The ethics and morality of Jesus are: you do not use force, you do not initiate force or threaten violence, you do not torture people, you do not engage in inquisitions in order to get people to do or think what you think they should do or think. That's not what Christianity is all about. And a Christian theocracy is a land of liberty under God, where spontaneously and from the heart we obey God's commandments. So we need to understand that the myth, that the current doctrine of the separation of church and state is a myth. And we can do that by studying the United States Supreme Court decision in 1892, when it said that America is a Christian nation, and gave us a history lesson. It looked at all the documents, the most important charters, constitutions, and other political and legal documents, going back to Christopher Columbus, who was motivated to explore based on his Christian religion. And we find out a lot of really very important things when we study the fact that America was intended to be a Christian theocracy, a nation under God with God ruling. Washington described God as the ruler of nations, and not just ruling in our hearts, but ruling in the councils of government, he said. And that makes America a theocracy. So we need to read about America as a Christian theocracy, and then be able to distinguish that from America as an atheistic theocracy like the Soviet Union. Of course, nobody, very few people anyway, but maybe a growing number want America to become an Islamic theocracy. Well, we need to start, I think, by looking at America as a Christian theocracy, because that's what made America the most prosperous and most admired nation in history, the fact that it was a Christian theocracy, a nation under God. The fourth work that we need to write, that we need to read, if we were to follow George Washington's advice as our personal life coach. Back in 1776, when the Declaration of Independence was written, there was another book written by a man named Adam Smith called The Wealth of Nations, an inquiry into why it is some nations are wealthy and some riches, some nations are poor. And he said that in many ways, government mercantilism of the kind that Britain was imposing on the colonies, the kind that the North was imposing on the South during the Civil War era, that results in poverty. Well, we need to go far beyond Adam Smith and understand the difference between capitalism and socialism. Capitalism brings prosperity. Socialism brings poverty and mass death. And we need to find out, we need to understand why it is that capitalism works, and why it is that socialism is not just wasteful but inefficient. I mean, it's immoral. It's unethical. It depends on the initiation of force against people. And socialism always results in a dictatorship. It results in tyranny. It results in poverty and ultimately mass death. But most Americans today couldn't explain why capitalism is better than socialism, even if they might believe it. And in fact, they might believe that capitalism is a bad thing. But what we're talking about is the obedience of the laws of nature and of nature's God, and the absence of the initiation of force, but a nation that's based on persuasion, harmony, cooperation, and voluntary effort. Now, another thing that Washington had that Americans lack today is optimism concerning the progress and the future potential of progress in not just America, but in the world. Is it possible to have a Christian nation? Is it possible to have capitalism rather than socialism? Are human beings predestined to devolve into tyranny and mass death, tribulation, Antichrist, Armageddon, mass destruction? Or can we have a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence? Is it worth our time to try to create a novus ordo seclorum, a new order for the ages? America's founding fathers believed that they were setting up a government of liberty under God, which would last for generations, for ages. It would be a model to all the world that we can base, that the people can govern, that we don't need divine right of kings, but we could have the consent of the governed, that nothing needs to happen without the consent, nothing needs to happen by compulsion or the initiation of force. If we think consistently about that, we simply have to ask, is it possible? And this is a biblical question, and it needs to be answered by focusing on the Bible and what it says about the future. And for many Americans today, and most Christians today, they have a decidedly unbiblical pessimism concerning the future. So we need to study this so we can have optimism concerning the possibility of peace on earth, the possibility of a society where the blessings of liberty are secured for ourselves and our posterity, for the future, for future generations. So we propose reading a book which basically is a catalog of all the verses in the New Testament that talk about our future, and you will be surprised. And if you're willing for iron to sharpen iron, you will grow. You will really grow in your understanding of the Bible by focusing on the question of whether the Bible predicts ultimate pessimism and defeat and destruction, or whether the Bible promotes an optimistic view of the progress of human beings when they obey God and they live in a Christian theocracy where our children are taught not to kill and not to steal, and where we trust in the forgiveness of Jesus rather than our own ability to take vengeance on other people. These are extraordinary possibilities, and I'd like to have you to enroll in this course. It's possible that you've been pausing this audio and looking at this huge web page that you're on right now. And if you have been looking at the page, scrolling up and down, you see it's huge and there's over 1,000 links. And I've provided basically everything I can give you to try to prove to you that this is what George Washington would advise you to do, to read these five important works, study these five important ideas. But the purpose of this webpage is really to be able to answer your questions. When you say, well, and now is that really true? I give you a link to give you some evidence and argumentation to support my claim. But I really do believe that the best way to approach this is not to hit and pick on all these web links that are on this page, but to go through the program systematically, to take a half an hour, 45 minutes a day, and read a little bit from each of these five works every day, take some time during the rest of the day to think about what you read, and after 365 days, 1 year from today, if you embark upon this program, 1 year from today, you will be remarkably changed. It's going through the process systematically, daily, and over some time so you have time to think about it, so you have time to process it. At the very bottom of the webpage you're on right now, there's a simple form. And if you're willing, if you're interested in this, I want you to simply type in your email address and ask any question you have, or better yet, just say, I'm interested, I want to know, how do I enroll in George Washington coaching? How can I experience what I would experience if George Washington traveled through time and could be my personal coach for an entire year? And I'll tell you what we're going to do about that. I've created and am continuing to enlarge on a body of over 2,000 web pages, which offer all the information that I think George Washington would share with you if he could be your coach for an entire year, 365 days. I'm recording, for your benefit, a reading of the five most important works in the history of Western civilization, so that whether you're in your car or you're exercising or you're doing the dishes or something, you can listen to those five most important works, and over the course of 365 days, get them into your brain. And I really do guarantee that the cost of this program, it will be refunded to you totally if you're not satisfied, but I would even be willing to double it if you really systematically work through these programs. Now, if you want to double your money back guarantee, what I'm going to require is that you start a blog and simply answer a couple of questions every day about what you've read. And if you have a blog like that and you're linking to the web pages that I'm going to send to you via email, you will find that your brain has been completely changed. Your life has been changed. It's going to be revolutionary in the nonviolent transformational sense of that. You will experience the greatest level, the most profound change, the most beneficial transformation that you have ever experienced in your entire life. Iron will sharpen iron. It'll be a pleasant but extraordinary journey. Simply type your email address into the form at the very bottom of this page, and we will talk about the next step to get you enrolled in the George Washington Coaching Program. Or spend the next day or two looking at the links on this webpage. There's a ton of links. There's a ton of information here. You could do this whole program yourself, but I think you'll experience greater results if you hire a coach. And that's what we offer here at georgewashingtoncoaching.com. send me a letter. Use that form at the bottom of the page to tell me you're interested, and we'll get in touch. We'll talk by email. Maybe we'll get on the phone, and we'll start working on this program. I think you're going to be absolutely amazed. Thanks very much for listening to this audio file, and I hope you'll make a special attempt to weigh the option here and get signed up for a year of George Washington coaching.